Join the conversation at everydaynovelist.com. Submit a question, leave a comment, or a creative death threat. Or find the host at J.D. Sawyer on Minds.com, or hit him up at feedback@jdsawyer.net. We can't do it without you.
Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer, author of nearly 30 books, more than 30 short stories, and numerous articles and scripts and essays, coming to you from up in the crow's nest with my spyglass on this daily voyage through the dicey waters of business, craft, learning, and art in the writing life. Welcome to The Questions, episode 694. Today, Ian asks,
I've got a follow-up to Don's question on typing faster. You took that answer to a whole new level that has me considering my superior attitude of, duh, of course I touch type. Are there other parts of the writing process analogous to this where you have dug deep to discover ways to outwit the conscious mind and write even faster?
So 2 days ago, I talked to Roland about a lot of this stuff. Let me see what else I can find. So to recap briefly, what I said in my answer to Roland is that figuring out how to back burner stuff so that your creativity is working when you're doing other things, very important. Finding ways to lubricate the interface between your mind and the keyboard so that you can type as fast and as well as you speak extemporaneously. And practicing speaking extemporaneously in high-demand kinds of ways so that you have all your vocabulary at your fingertips as much as possible. How else to lubricate the writing process?
A few of the things that I've noticed for you is a high attention to ergonomics. You change writing positions frequently. You don't have like this one writing seat that you always sit in the same way. You like move from your main desk to a couch to a recliner to back of a closet.
And even when I'm in the wing back, which I'm going to be getting back soon.
I missed that.
Yeah, well, we're getting it back. That's my writing
chair. We need a second one.
I'll build another one. Even when I'm in the wing back, I change from sitting on the edge of the seat to sitting in the back to sitting on pillows to not sitting on pillows and all sorts of stuff. Yeah, I change positions every 5 or 10 minutes.
And during the rest of your day, you take time to do physical activity, whether it's physical labor or taking a hike with the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And you make kind of a major deal out of making meals. At least one meal a day, you take some time to cook. And you really cook, not just like throw some things in
a
pot
and wait.
Work
some raw spices and ingredients and build it up. Uh-huh. As kind of an art form. Yeah, I do have multiple art forms. It's not just the cooking and...
Yeah, and all of those things allow your mind to go to different places. And you're always either reading or listening to lectures or listening to podcasts, listening to audiobooks. You've always got something engaging your mind.
No, frequently, not always. I do have quiet time, too.
You do. But particularly when you're doing other things, you've got something going on in the background.
As I've been welding on the truck this week, I've been working my way through several foreign policy books, history books.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to sort of meet your dare and dig a couple of steps deeper... Probably the two best things you can do, aside from all of that, maybe even more important than all of that, are vertical socialization and learning how to think. In an episode recently, I talked to a girl who is one of triplets who was trying to figure out how to write people who were only children, and I talked a bit about vertical socialization. It's worth looking at that episode. Hugely important if you want to be able to roam the vast fields of human experience in ways that really stoke your creativity. The second thing, and maybe this is the most important thing for me, learn how to think. Most people don't know how to think. You realize how much most people don't know how to think when you start learning a little bit, and the more you learn, the more you realize how much of a piker you've been your whole life. The Autodidacts Bible, which I'm writing right now, is about how to think and how to learn, and I'll refer you to that book as soon as it's done, and it'll be done as soon as I get a chance to sit down for a couple of evenings and finish it up. So it'll be out sometime this fall, because of, you know, reads and grammar checks and all that kind of stuff. But how to think is your greatest potential strength, because thinking is not just problem solving and logic. And logic is not just what you've been led to believe through watching Star Trek or taking a basic introductory logic course. There are about 10 different modes of thought. Each of them are supremely useful for different things, and learning what things are suited to what modes of thought, and then, for creative purposes, deliberately misapplying things, really helps. Now, why does this help the writing process? When you look at the world around you, and you've got sort of a normal perceptual mode, meaning that you're attuned to the world in a way that most people are, you're going to see a couple of things. You're going to see the stuff around you. You're going to get a glimpse of the relationships between the things around you. And you'll have an emotional reaction to all of it. And it will be conditioned by your worldview. When you learn to think, especially when you learn to think iteratively, you learn to internalize things like chaos theory and other stuff like that. When you learn to think and you look around you, the systems pop out of the background. It's not just a vague sense of the interrelationships. You look at a field and you are experiencing it on a whole different level than most people experience it. It leads you to think in very different ways about everything. You'll find yourself sitting in a room full of people you agree with on, you know, whether chocolate is better than vanilla or what strategy for national budgetary policy is best. You can agree with everyone around you, but your reasons will be different. And those reasons being different is a manifestation of a deeper way of engaging the world that you've learned by learning how to think deeply that opens the world up in such a way that when you come across something, you can immediately start connecting. Say you come across a pen in the store. Normal person picks up a pen, they see the utility. I can write with this. They see the style. This looks beautiful, or this looks like crap. They see the price. They think maybe of their relationship obliquely. I don't mean they're pondering it. They think obliquely of their relationship with the retailer and their obligation to pay for it before they go out. And they may look and see if it was made in China because they're participating in the embargo themselves or not. Or they may look at to see if it was made by a company that ethically sources its labor. Whatever. That's your normal top tier looking at things. If I pick up a pen in the store, and this is not because I'm special, it's just because I've spent a lot of time learning how to think. If I pick up a pen in the store, all those things occur to me. But I'm also keenly aware of the 10,000-step supply chain it took to bring that pen to my fingers, and the connection that has to the geopolitical order, and the way that geopolitical order influences the dietary habits of people at different points in the supply chain, and what the military risk associated with this pen is, and what a war would do to the price of this pen, and all sorts of stuff like that. When you start to see the world on that kind of a level, stories pop up to you all the time, and you wind up mentally telling stories to yourself about the world around you all the time that are on the level of complexity of the books of Game of Thrones. The thing that made Game of Thrones successful, and I'm going to go into this a lot in later episodes because someone asked me a specific question that we'll get to in about a week and a half. The thing that made Game of Thrones successful and appealing in the first few seasons is that it's not a character story. Not exactly. It's a story about the constraints that characters operate under. The more deeply you can see the constraints and systems at work around you, the more effectively and easily you'll be able to generate very complex, rich, satisfying stories. Knowing history, knowing how to think, learning things you're not comfortable with, studying the arguments of people you don't like, all of these things really, really help. If you learn how to think, you will be able to tell better stories faster. And that's true no matter how deeply educated you are, no matter how well you think now. Every time I read a new book that expands my world, my writing improves. And Kitty can attest to that because she's my first reader.
Yeah, that's true.
And she would know because she has to read everything I write, even when she hates it. And there have been a few she hated. So, for my money, that's the secret sauce. Learn how to think. And learn how to think better than you think now, no matter how well you know how to think now. It will pay dividends in ways you cannot imagine, and it will lubricate the writing process. So, that's my advice for what it's worth. Thank you very much for the question, and I'll see you tomorrow.
The Everyday Novelist is written by J. Daniel Sawyer and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and Kitty Nakian and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. The text is copyright 2019 J. Daniel Sawyer and the production is copyright 2019 Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license and all other rights are reserved to their respective owners. Join the conversation. Submit a question, leave a comment, or a creative death threat. Or find me at jdsawyeronminds.com or hit me at feedback@jdsawyer.net. We can't do it without you.